So,
I'm eating.
Welcome back. Last time I spoke to you, we obviously we just went over about various bits. We went off on a few tangents, but I wanted to talk about the album today, because that's why we're here, essentially. So, it was a labour of love. Would that be a fair summary of the whole thing?
A labour of love. And I'm not sure that it was all that for you in a lot of the planning. It must have been, there was a lot of work went into that, and you did so much with that.
But well, it wasn't just me.
It was certainly a labour of love, I think, for
I think for the, rest of us. Yeah, for most of us it was, I mean, it's come out, it's amazing, obviously. Mm-hmm. I am slightly biased because I'm on it, as are you. But what are you, now that it's come out, it's been out, what, 4 or 5 months, you've done a few gigs with it. What are your thoughts on it?
I just think it's just such a wonderful thing that everybody did together.
Yeah.
And I think I know that the icing on the cake was all of those people, you know, meeting in the studio, in a fabulous studio in London.
Yeah.
And then the additional people that were turning up from London, you know, as guests or even just to pop in to say hello to us because they haven't seen us for a while. But that was just an extraordinary musical reunion, basically, which I felt that it was going to be good because, of course, we'd been rehearsing really a lot in preparation for that. And that was the plan, with everybody putting time and effort into rehearsing the pieces in sectionals and then as a band. And no, it's such a tremendous, you know, work that went into building up for that, and so much good work behind the scenes by individuals within the band and within the organisation. You know, not everyone, but just that handful of people whose idea it was in the first place.
And whose idea was it?
Pardon?
Whose idea was it?
Well, I think
was it Tom or Ruben?
I think it was probably Ruben, Tom, and you. I think
it wasn't my idea.
Well,
it was not my idea.
No,
it was not my idea. I'm glad we did it, but it wasn't. I can't take credit for that. I think it might have been Tom and Ruben
lockdown,
together
know,
talking
it?
One night, probably after a gig over a pint, saying that, you know, let's. Ellis ain't getting any younger, you know. We haven't done one.
When was about you or me?
Both of us. the last one was, what, about 12 years ago? The Abbey Road one?
Yes.
So we were due to do one, to be fair. And
that point was strongly made by Ruben, I remember, because he was very keen to make this happen and did tremendous.
Yeah, I think it was Tom and Ruben's, you know, brainchild, I think. And I think originally we were going to record it in 2021 or even 2020. I can't even remember now. Mm-hmm. The whole thing seems like a blur because obviously COVID happened and just put everything on ice, made rehearsals just really difficult because we couldn't get into this jazz centre to rehearse when we were in lockdown. Then when we came out of lockdown,
we had some rehearsals. So many.
We had a few, but, you know, we were asking people to come from all over the UK, essentially. So we had a core of people from Doncaster that could make most rehearsals, and then we were trying to get people up from London and stuff. It was difficult, but I think also because on previous recordings, we were a gigging band in the sense that we were young and we were playing in the band regularly, and we were playing a certain set and we knew what to play. But with this album, it was like, well, what are we going to play? Because we're not actually a gigging band at the moment. You know, we probably came together once a year at Christmas for the Earl gig. So I think that's when it was like, well, what shall we play? What are we trying to create? And, you know, it was a much different approach to an album than we'd ever done before.
Most definitely, yeah.
And then you add into the mix so many people involved in it because we wanted to involve a lot of people. Then COVID. That's why it was difficult to bring out. But I think that's what makes it even more special. Just for me anyway. Like, yeah, it was difficult to do. And I think we've all had moments, you know, during that process we've been pulling our hair out or frustrated with it. But that's what makes it even better now that it's out, I think. And it, I think it's visually and sonically, it's come out way better than I thought it was going to be. Way better.
Well, I feel exactly the same way as that, because I'm quite amazed at each one of the tracks.
Yeah.
And so, God forbid that you should ask me if I've got a favourite track. And I'm not.
Well, funnily enough,
I thought you might,
Dad,
do, but I'm not going to answer you, because I think enough about that.
I won't ask you that, but okay, I might ask you something similar. Anyway, carry on with what you were saying.
What I want to say is that it was a labour of love, certainly for me, and I know a lot of the majority of the people. As you quite said, it wasn't without its sort of organisational difficulties in many respects, and that was quite an extraordinary thing to give people a chance to come and actually meet with us. And everybody was so sort of on with, you know, fixing the set and knowing what we were rehearsing for, and the pieces that we were doing. So that was really very important. But those people, you quite rightly said, travelling long distances at their own expense, you know, of their own volition, and giving up time and giving up money, because some of them were not taking their own personal engagements on those Sunday afternoons. So that was an extraordinary thing to happen. You know, and well, you know how I feel about it, and I can't thank anyone enough for that. You know, I'm just, I suppose I'm a little bit sad that there were some that didn't sort of survive the rigors of, you know, that routine and that procedure. You know, and it's human nature being what it is, I suppose that's what's likely to happen. But the people that did sort of stay with it did such magnificent things, I think, behind the background. And it was, though I'm looking at the album here, I had precious little to do with that other than direct a few pieces, because that's another thing we need to be aware of, is it's not just me directing. Yeah. And though I'm pleased I am, but I was, I'm pleased that Ruben was on board with us as well, because he's just an amazing band director in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
But then the icing on the cake for both Ruben and myself, that we were able to cajole a certain Mr. Albert Wood and into the ranks. So he's been sort of directing. So we've been three directors, can spread it around a bit.
Yeah. Did James direct one as well?
Oh, James, he did quite a few directions, directing in rehearsals, but he was usually covering for Al.
James did a massive job in the control room, didn't he? Basically making notes of what, when we'd put a take down, he would like make notes on what needed to be redone. And again, that is invaluable, because it's so much going on. Like you're obviously trying to listen to what's going on around you, but you're also thinking, I've got to play my part absolutely perfectly. So you don't really have the bandwidth to be going, was this bit, you know, other than what you and maybe your section have done, it's hard to know what else is going on.
You're quite right at the studio aspect of that. James was, you know, he was brilliant at that, what he did. And I'm pleased that he did, because he got me out of a job, because initially, I think, out of politeness, I was asked if I'd like to do it. And I quickly made a decision that I wouldn't be the best person to do it, but James certainly was.
Oh, yeah.
And he runs his own band. Well, he's got so much experience at that, and well done, James. Yeah.
No, it was a real team effort. It was, you know, everyone put a proper shift in over a couple of years. It didn't happen overnight. Because of COVID, in a way, I think that the fact that it landed in the middle of COVID, it was good in a way that COVID pushed it back, because that's what made it the 50-year anniversary album. Because had we done it to plan, it would have come out maybe a year before that, and it wouldn't have had the same impetus, I don't think. Wow. And you know, it wouldn't be called 50 years, obviously.
No.
So in a way, it was kind of like meant to be. It gave us more time to, not me, but you and, you know, the Ruben and Tom and James and that, and girls, to discuss the parts of the charts that were going in. I mean, that must have, I'm so glad I didn't have to do any of that. How did you pick, like, how did you scale it down to the charts? Because obviously there was some other stuff we were doing that were great, great arrangements. So how did you manage to, like, just whittle it down?
Well, whittling wasn't an easy process. And it wasn't, because we did have not only some charts that we decided we were doing, but there were others that we wanted to do. And there was also a process of sometimes I might be slightly rocked by the fact that another piece might have been suggested, you know, and then something had come from somewhere else. But that was really important for me because, and for the fact that other people, everyone had an input into what we should do on the album and the pieces that we should run and concentrate on, you know. And you know yourself, I would have to be reminded on occasions to make sure that I'm actually rehearsing the pieces that we really look like we're going to do on the album.
Yeah.
So that we did. But I must sort of thank Ruben and Tom in turn, because they came up with sort of fantastic ideas in terms of tunes we should play and tunes I hadn't heard of from certain bands, I thought. And Ruben would send me a copy of that, and I think, good Lord, this is a good chart.
Mm.
So there were some things that came into this album that weren't already in our repertoire. They weren't what we called, our hits of the year.
Yeah, there's quite a few, I would say. Yeah, that's what I mean. It was like in previous years when we've done albums, we've basically picked the best 12 tracks from the previous decade or 5-6 years or whatever. This was different. We almost had to trial songs and try them, see if they fit. And
I think that was the plan of Ruben, which I didn't realise at the time, but it was a good plan.
Yeah.
And he was able to involve people certainly some that I hadn't heard of. But when I heard the charts and realised that this gave a whole varied approach to band. There's something, we hope that there's something on that album for everyone.
Yeah.
Because it certainly does cross all the big band styles.
Yeah.
And I just think the way those particular new charts were worked at, particularly by Ruben, who bless him, directed them, and we were able to sort of hear the results, you know, the studio when we would go down afterwards doing the mixing and et cetera. But yes, the lads in London did something very special for us, as I say, not only with the charts, one of them even was scrounged from an American favourite.
I wouldn't say it was scrounged, it was commissioned.
It was commissioned, the official chart? It is, I know.
And Dijar paid for it. I don't know if we ever told you that, but the Dijar board sanctioned that.
Oh, did they?
Tom got in touch with Tom Kubis, who's one of your favourite arrangers and probably is for most of us, because I think we've done a Tom Kubis chart on all of the CD albums.
Most of the albums. I did check in. Not all, but most. No? I think there's just one that we didn't do.
They're all bangers. Like, we love playing them. As a sax player, I love playing them because the solis are really cool. Mm. There's always a really good sax soli to get your teeth into. And they're just really good arrangements. So that, again, was Tom's idea. Let's get Tom Kubis to write a song specifically for you. And I think I was the one that suggested we should call it, you know, It Makes Sense, because that's what you always sign off your missives with.
Would appear in a few words. Yeah.
And I think Tom basically messaged Tom Kubis in LA and was like, this is the plan. Told him the type of stuff that we liked from his previous arrangements and, you know, suggested that it needed to have quite a few soloists on it so that we could feature, the plethora of soloists that we've got in the band. But yeah, do you remember when Tom, not Tom Kubis, but Tom Tate came and visited you for your birthday?
Yes, that was on a birthday, I remember.
And I think turned up at the we centre. Were all in masks, weren't we, I think, because it was...
I'm not sure that we might have been. You might have been there.
I think we were.
But I do remember wondering whether, because you were in working at the time and you'd got some fairy cakes or something, can't think why, and it looked like we were going to have a coffee and a biscuit together, which is a bit rare.
Tom set it up, it was your birthday, and Tom said, oh, I'm going to just make out, I'm just passing through, see your old man for his birthday. Mm-hmm. But what he actually brought was the original score for You Know It Makes Sense.
Well, the whole part, the
was
whole,
it the whole
box
thing?
Part
right.
with the score and so beautifully packaged.
Yeah.
And, the actual music quality, the production, the printing, and the process, it's just absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I have that with great pride. And I've kept the original parts.
I bet you have.
So that the players can only play from copies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that your favourite track?
It's not my favourite track. No, it's just one of many favourites.
Right. Right. So I can't ask you what your favourite track is because I think most of us would probably struggle to answer that. But is there a track that you particularly enjoyed? Because obviously you would have had to do your homework, you would have listened to different versions of it, you've studied the score, you've had to think, well, who could solo on this? Where would it fit within the album in terms of the track list and stuff like that? Is there anything that you enjoyed researching or just checking out?
I think going to... Well, I'll start at the beginning. If, as you've heard me say at many concerts that we've done, and I'm assuring an audience that we're just about to play a tune or, you know, that you may have heard before, because people that have come to concerts over the years, I don't know how many times I've heard people saying, I never really thought I liked jazz, but I love this jazz.
Yeah.
And they have usually been people that may have heard a very good band arrangement of a tune they recognise, or not, as the case may be. So I suppose the only piece we had on the album was a piece called Show Me the Way to Go Home. That's
Sammy Nestico, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that was my tribute to possibly the writer that we played more charts of it, despite our uppermost thoughts of Tom Kubis.
Yeah.
But Sammy Nestico did so much. He was a prolific writer, a beautiful band arranger for the Basie Orchestra and for his own band. And but he did it not only at the high-level, professional level. So the whole series for, intervenor groups, they were all graded orchestrations. So you wouldn't go into any of our three bands within the Doncaster Youth Jazz Association.
Yeah.
From stage band to swing to Daijo, you were to see at least one Sammy Nestico and probably quite several.
But would it
within
be
each of, because at different levels?
But it would have been the original one, not like a watered down version by someone else.
Sometimes a watered down version by himself.
All right.
So some of his tunes that he's done, he's then done a simplified arrangement. So the same thing.
That's really unusual.
And that's good, you know, because of the sometimes with limited orchestration.
Yeah.
When you haven't got the full complement. And so they've been really good in sort of educational terms of training young musicians over the years to, as they say in the business, to learn how to swing.
And I think also that's where we broke our own rule of never re-recording a track, because we've actually recorded that, or you have, haven't you?
Certainly not on one of our previous albums, no.
Show Me the Way to Go Home?
No, certainly
not.
Is it
not on a cassette?
You may have caught me. I don't know.
I think it might be on a cassette. I think we didn't realise that when we decided.
Maybe we didn't. Oh, well, it's a double tribute to him.
I'm pretty sure that there's like an unwritten rule that we never re-record something that's been done before.
Yeah, we tried to uphold that, I know.
But I think we dropped the ball on that one. But it doesn't matter because it's such a great...
Well, we dropped something. Yeah.
It's such a great chart, though.
Yeah, it is. It's just such a lovely arrangement of a tune that everybody knows, featuring all sections. And it really good.
I remember Granddad used to sing that when he'd come in.
Your dad used to sing
that all the time.
Yeah. Good Lord, that's going to take me back. So it's partly his fault then.
Yeah.
But the album is such that does stand out, and I'm pleased that is really good. I'm just trying to think of anything else in there that would stand out. As I say, they are all good charts, each one for different reasons. Do you know what I really like is for people like you and others, or even maybe listeners that I don't know or know, to let me know some favourite tracks. I'd be interested to know.
Well, like I said, I think it's difficult. I like Show Me the Way to Go Home because it's got that juicy sax solo in it, and it's just really chilled out, and we've played it over the years so many times. So I like that. But I really like your track from Tom Kubis.
That is a lovely piece.
They're all great. I remember when I first heard Mandeville, I wasn't too into it. I just thought it was a bit, I don't know. But now that I've heard it.
The horns in.
Mm-hmm. It's a brilliant track. It's so different. And then you've got the Lawrence Cottle one that is just like so
Well, I was partly going to mention that because of the extraordinary sort of lines on that.
Yeah.
And the soloing. And it's a very difficult piece, you know. And
we had Joe in here the other day.
Did you?
And we were talking about, I was asking him if he had any favourites, and I think he highlighted my favourite things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and then Al came in and we were talking about that as well. And I was trying to say to Joe that a drummer, Steve Parry, who arranged My Favourite Things, he's a drummer essentially, obviously an amazing arranger. And Joe didn't know that. I was like, yeah, a drummer wrote that. And he's like, that's amazing. So he really likes how it's come out on the album. But again, that is so hard. I think this certainly for me, and probably the rest of the saxophones, they'd probably say this technically was the hardest album we've had to do. I mean, really? I remember even going in on the first day, I wasn't fully confident that we'd pull off some of those lines. It was difficult.
Everybody worked so hard.
It was really
and
difficult.
It was just wonderful to see and witness. But you know, going back to, you mentioned the Lawrence Cottle part as well, which I'd again, that one is down to Ruben, because Ruben knows Lawrence Cottle. And I have to say that only on Monday night this week we did our rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided to run that piece to see how it is, because we've not played it since the recording. So, but we had a deputy bass player in.
Oh, that's nice of you.
And I know, nice of me. That's what Glenn Musgrove, for bless him, a past player with the challenge, back for the first time in years. He'd taken a break from touring.
Sorry, Glenn, if you're watching.
Yeah, sorry, Glenn. Well, I did apologise, but he said he'd enjoyed it, and he said and thanks especially for the finale. He said, you know, thanks very much for putting a Lawrence Cottle piece in front of me on the last piece. He said, only the finest bass player in town, probably in the world.
Yeah.
That was Glenn paying respects to Lawrence Cottle. But he got through it, and he did very well, but no easy piece.
No, but again, that's come out so well.
Yeah,
on the album.
No,
but it was hard.
There are some sort of very extraordinary moments on there, and the soloing as well.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, all the soloists that have, you know, have stepped up to the plate and given such a good account of themselves creatively, and it's just extraordinary.
Mm.
And even some of our guests that came back that we met in the studio for the first time, because they hadn't been managed to rehearse with us before we got down to the Metropolis.
Tom's dad came down, didn't he? Robin came down.
Oh, yeah,
and played
Robin
French horn.
He came down in French horn.
So that was good. Because I was listening to that through the control room and heard all the horns.
Oh, brilliant.
And it was just like, wow.
And Colin and Karen.
Yeah.
There as well.
Three horns. It was just proper icing on the cake moment, that.
It's just lovely writing as well. Yeah. You know, it's just a story about Patrick Williams. And it's.
And Karen's on the original album.
Oh, she is, isn't she? Yes, she is.
Which is a nice touch.
No, I mean, it's like with that particular writer, as with Tom Kubis, who we mentioned earlier. I mean, I love all of his lines, his dynamic contrast that he uses quite a lot, and leaves spaces for soloists to find themselves to get in, so that you have a sense of a soloist entry.
Mm.
All of the wonderful contrapuntal writing that goes on throughout the pieces, and it just. Yeah, it's just so exciting. It's just exciting for me because I do relatively little than just waft in front of the orchestra. But
well,
I'm in the best seat in the hall, because they're just such fantastic musicians and really good people with big hearts, which is very important, I think, in this business. And again, you know, even the album, which I think we ought not to. This is part of our fundraising project to try and raise funds for the Doncaster Youth Jazz Association.
Yeah.
And that's, and these people are given their time and expertise for that.
And what's great also is on the album and subsequently in the band, there are people that didn't go through Dijar who share our kind of mission.
That's right.
They want to help out as well, just because they appreciate jazz education. So I think it's a great project. I love the album. I love the design, like Split. Ollie at Split did an amazing job with the when he first, do you remember we'd been on a Zoom call with Ollie and he said, oh, I've got some designs. And I was like, wow. Because we basically, me and Tom said, look, it needs to be modern, but it needs to look retro. And obviously,
I think that's what he came up with. Very clever.
And we've got those prints coming out soon. You know that printing that me and you did?
Oh, yes.
The other month. They're nearly dry. Do you know it takes about 6 weeks?
That was another fabulous day in paradise, wasn't it?
It takes 6 weeks for those to dry, apparently.
Does it?
Yeah. Because I think we put too much on some of the earlier ones. We put too much paint on. But yeah, those prints of the album will be out soon. You need to sign them, by the way.
Oh, really?
And then people can buy them and raise money for Die Jar.
Well, let's see. I'd be very honest if they did, if they felt they wanted to sign one of those posters, piece of paper with my signature on, I'd be very honest.
Well, just initial it. Because it's like a piece of art, and like artists put their little name in the bottom corner. Just do that, maybe number it, because they are limited edition.
Yeah, numbers are important, yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they're great. I'm going to have two or three of them, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We just need to get hold of them. And then. But yeah, great album. I'm sure we'll be talking about it again sometime.
I hope so.
You've got a gig this Thursday with, obviously, the band.
Yeah, going to Hull.
So good luck with that.
For the first time without taking our wares. And importantly, we've got our first concert in Doncaster.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Is it the 21st
of April? Right. It's an afternoon concert.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that we plug that on the old Instagram and Facebook. And we'll get you back in another time. We need to talk about some tours and some funny stories and, and stuff like that in the future.
I'll have to check out some of these stories first, I think.
Yeah, we might have to vet some of the stories.
Just before we leave this, you know, can I just sort of say about the album and about that whole day, which we've been talking about, is that I will never, ever forget the sort of spirit with which people approached that studio on the day and how they, some people were meeting up after a short time, others were meeting up, having not seen each other in years.
Yep.
And the greetings of those people, seeing all those people giving sort of hugs and handshakes and things that we all met. And then obviously somebody had to sort of say, right, we got work to do, ladies and gents, you know, and we did. But the way that people efficiently, so quickly, kicked into work mode and the concentration and the level of focus throughout the whole of the 2 days was amazing. Yes, we did have the evenings when we could go locally and share a jar or two, but then as soon as we hit the studio, the hugs and kisses were abated and it was down to business.
Yeah.
And as soon as that red light was on, I was just so amazingly and proud to witness most of it, because of course I directed some of the pieces, but there are lots of times when I could relax throughout the day and just observe and listen and take it all in, because I wanted to remember it forever.
Yeah, well, you
and
can.
With this album, I will.
Yeah, you can. Brilliant. You literally can Thank play you it whenever all. You want.
Thank you all very much from the bottom of an old man's heart. God bless you.